Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. What does a winter garden mean to you? Usually it's filled with snow this time of year, but so far there are actually weeds growing in my garden because of the warm temperatures and humidity, I guess. Joining us now to talk about the winter garden and what it can mean in its many iterations is Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Knapke. Deborah is on the faculty at Columbus State Community College, where she teaches about herbaceous plants, specialty gardens, and sustainable landscape practices and design. She is the co-author of 5 books on gardening, and she's penned articles for local and statewide newsletters and for GardenGate and Fine Gardening magazines. And she started a new blog, heartland-gardening.com. If you want to go there right now and check that out, welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So tell us about the blog.
Well, it is actually a collaborative effort that was cooked up by three of us while we were drinking wine at the Garden Writers Association conference in Indianapolis in August. We sat down and we thought, well, there's all these blogs out there. We want to get our message out. We want to be accessible to people. But we're thinking, what's missing? So we came up with this idea. First of all, there's three of us. And we have sections that will change weekly. Some will be on, you know, each section will be on for a couple weeks, and then we'll have a new edition. So it is changing its little sound bites of information, and we're hoping that people will find us and then ask us to maybe write for them or give them a talk or whatever, go on our separate websites. But it's another one of those social networking, get your name out there, and yet think about how to do it with, we hope, with class.
Now, tell us who you're working with on it.
Okay. Teresa Woodard, excellent writer. She is our computer guru. She's making the site work. Michael and I couldn't have done without
Michael
Leach, previously and still does periodically write for the Columbus Dispatch. And it's just been great because Michael's been helping me with my writing. So is Teresa. They both... You know, my writing's okay, but they have flair. You know, I'm the plant nerd. So when
I know, yeah, and I'm waiting for you to throw one out there that
that's
I
right.
have to
so
go look
it's,
up.
So it's like we have the plant person, we have a person who's, you know, and two really good writers. I consider myself an average to above average writer. I'm not in their league, but I have the plant facts and the garden design and that background, and Michael has some of that too. So we overlap, and it's just been a wonderful collaboration. So we've been working on it since August and put it up, launched it on January 1st.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, I tried to get Michael Leach on the show, something I've been talking about. He and I have been talking about for a long time, so I thought, what a great idea. And he's, of course, in Florida.
Yeah, he's
bah humbug,
down there sunning
Michael.
Himself.
And, but we're already planning a show on edible front yards. So
yes.
We'll be looking for that in March sometime, I think.
That
it's
would
be
fantastic.
So the winter garden. I'm serious. I have one of those crummy little weeds. It's taking over, and I wonder, should I get out there and start hacking at it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If it gets much warmer, that crummy little weed's going to start setting up its bloom spike and throwing out seed. It doesn't need much more warmth. It's a brassica. It's one of the little winter cresses. It actually is edible. I just don't think it's very tasty.
It's kind of that flat leaf thing
that's
crawling along.
Well,
there's the
little one that makes cute little mounds.
Okay, no.
Okay, not that one. Then there's the flat one, which is the... I believe that's also edible, but I'd have to look up to make sure. What you have is Stellaria. I'm trying to remember the common name. Oh, I hate common names. Someone's going to call in and say, Deb.
I happen to love common names.
Yeah, I know. I know most people do.
Stellaria.
Stellaria.
Well, maybe we can have somebody look up Stellaria for us.
It's in the carnation family. This is going to drive me nuts until I think about it. But it used to be used as a spring green, not as a winter green, if that's what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And if it goes to bloom and have little white flowers, little tiny white flowers. There's also... I'm seeing oxalis, you know, the little, what they call sour...
Shamrock or...
Yeah, the fake shamrock.
Yeah.
That's coming up. I was weeding 2 days ago. I was in my gardens weeding. We had that really warm day.
Right.
So I've weeded about 2 times this week. And I didn't get to some tasks in the fall, so I'm doing those now. It's just crazy. I think this winter's even warmer than the winter... I want to say it was about... 2002 or 2003, where we didn't go below zone 7. As of yet, I don't think we've gone below zone 8 in our temperatures.
It isn't a record breaker yet, which not yet. Surprised me, but the length.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of a thing. And then the real warmth. I mean, it was almost in the 60s, wasn't it? Or it
mm-hmm.
felt like it if you were in the
That's
sun the other
weeding.
Day. If you're just joining us, my guest is Deborah Kanapke, author, teacher, blogger.
Yes, blogger.
Commonly known, the common name for her is
That's
Ohio's
right.
Garden Sage.
I like that.
If you have a question or comment for Deborah Kanapke about winter gardening, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or winter weeding. Email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go onto the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you can tweet me at Ann Fisher WOSU if you want to do it that way. So, all right, so we better be weeding, getting out there and weeding then, and, you know, who thinks about doing that? Of course, you seem almost giddy about it.
I think it's, well, see, I like to weed. It's my meditation. You know, some people do yoga meditation, walking meditation. To me, weeding is a form of meditation. I don't have to think other than, oops, not weed. But one other thing about weeding, right now, if there are no blooms on this, leave the weeds there. Turn them upside down so that they stay in the garden and become compost.
Okay.
Because they're
like rip them up and turn them upside down.
You know, take them and turn them upside down, and they are excellent for the soil. They'll break down and they'll be really good for plants in spring.
I didn't prune everything and put everything away this year. I got stuff rotting all over the place in the garden, and like following your, you know, and it looks kind of yunky, but it's you know, finally the hosta leaves have deteriorated,
right.
And they're not not gungy looking as much.
But do look for disease. If you notice disease,
well,
or
in
if
the
you
tomatoes
rot,
and stuff, go,
yeah, tomatoes,
but
they're all out.
Right.
I take them out every year. There's no way that I can even pretend that there wasn't disease on my tomatoes this year. So, that just with the weeds, the harmless weeds that are coming up now until they bloom, then they're not harmless, but they'd be great food for the soil.
Bob in Akron, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I'm sitting here on my computer looking for my garden this summer. And the one thing you were talking about was the oxalis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to spread throughout the yard. Do I have to go out and turn that stuff up like you were talking about now?
I would do it now. I would do it while it's still nice outside, although today we're supposed to have rain. And you can leave the oxalis there, but I usually turn it upside down so the roots wither. Otherwise, the darn things will re-root.
Okay, I have one other question.
Okay.
Hello?
Yep,
no,
you're
there.
Okay, I bought some cellulose sponges, and I was wondering if I shredded those up and put them into the garden, would they retain the moisture and also break down so that it also would, you know, make the soil more nutrient-based or whatever?
Darn, that's a good question. I know some people have used cellulose in their soils. We have clay soils, and my intuition, without looking this up, and I'm going to kind of check that out, my intuition says I'm not so sure I like that idea because of a compaction issue. It would depend on how close it is to true cellulose only and not added fillers to keep it so that it stays together, because those may or may not be good for the soil. So I guess it would depend on the composition of the sponge. Now, if it's a real sponge, like from the ocean, I have put those into my garden and into my compost pile. Actually, my compost pile first, and let them break down. I have not put them raw into my garden. So,
if I put it over the soil with a peat over top of it, would that harm the garden?
I don't think it would harm it, and I'm saying this with caution because I don't know what kind of sponges you actually have, but I would be careful. I would try it as an experiment. I do that all the time. Put it in one area, put it down.
That's what I did.
And then dig it up and see if they've broken down.
Okay, I did it in one section. It kept the lawn where I did it, that one portion of the garden. I have a 130-foot portion, and it kept that 1 4 4-foot portion nice and moist, but I was afraid it might damage the soil or something.
Now, I don't know about that, but I would be careful about putting around crowns of plants. May keep too much moisture around them.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Take care, Bob. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Veronica on Facebook posted that Stellaria, the common name, is chickweed.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Veronica.
You, Veronica.
Love Veronica. Very
yeah, helpful. Chickweed is very healthy for you. It's very cleansing in the spring.
Okay.
Or now.
Kathy and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Hi. I don't know if my question was answered while I was speaking with the woman that answered the phone, but I had a question about whether or not I have a compost bin that I've had all summer, and I wasn't sure if I should continue to put stuff in there because it doesn't seem like it's going to, like if I put like food, like I would put my food waste in there, I put it in there now, it seems like it's not going to break down. And
absolutely. Put compost in all year round. I do. And
okay.
it may slow down in the winter because it's cold, but then it'll speed back up in warm times and in the spring. But
and it's still amazingly heat. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of heat in the center usually.
Right. Right.
Okay.
So keep on doing it.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Kathy. So chickweed's good for you. Stellaria is good.
Mm-hmm. Stellaria media is the botanical name in case anybody out there besides me cares.
But that's not, are you talking about, that's the stuff that might be growing the flat leaf?
Mm-hmm.
That, okay.
Well, and I don't think it'll be that little euphorbia, the one that, the spotted spurge that makes like a big round circle.
Cause no, it's not
that. That one needs heat. So I bet it's the chickweed. It's right now I'm seeing chickweed, the oxalis, and then the little wintercress or the little brassica weeds.
I always say I'm going to bring in examples. And I always forget.
Oh,
with
do
you.
It. I love it.
My guest is Deborah Kanapke, author, teacher, blogger. You know her as Ohio's Garden Sage. We'll return after this. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and you can help shorten our winter membership drive. Become a sustaining member right now. For every 100 sustaining members we receive, we will eliminate one day from our upcoming membership drive. As a sustaining member, your membership never expires, and your member card renews annually. But right now, you can help take one day off of our upcoming drive. Just visit WOSU.org for more details and make your sustaining gift today. And thanks for your support. 38 degrees with some rain in downtown Columbus. Showers are expected off and on throughout the day, a high of 47. Rain for tonight, a low of 39 degrees. There's a chance of some rain for Thursday, turning into a little snow, a high of 44 degrees. And rain mixing with snow for Thursday night, a low of 21. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Deborah Kanapke, author, teacher, blogger, you know, or as Ohio's Garden Sage. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about the winter garden today. What else? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. As Veronica did, you can post on Facebook and we will get that post. Question, comment, whatever. All Sides with Ann Fisher, and you can tweet us as well at Ann Fisher WOSU. We have an email from Blair, writes, after a day of gardening, I soak in Epsom salts for my sore muscles. The container says that the salts are also good for the garden. Is this true for us here in Central Ohio?
You can use Epsom salts. They are, what are they, a potassium salt, I think. And so they would do what potassium fertilizer does, which is support fruit growth and flower growth. So besides your muscles, they can work in the garden. And I'm trying to remember, there's one vegetable that really likes them. And maybe it'll come back to my mind. But I may put a post on Facebook about Epsom salts and how they can be used in the garden. It's one of the old time remedies for garden.
Well, thanks, Blair, for that. That's interesting to know. Jennifer in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, Jennifer, you're going to, I think, have to hold the phone a little bit farther away from your mouth.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Very good. Thank you.
I had a question. I'm looking for things to plant in the spring, and I have a drainage ditch kind of in my front yard, and I want to fill it in not with, like, grass, but just maybe something like a ground cover that could just kind of take over and eat or cover up so there wouldn't be weeds coming in. And I was looking at Vinca minor versus purple winter creeper, and I wondered if you had an opinion what would be good for here.
Is this full sun?
It's kind of part. It's both. It has parts that are full sun and then part shade. There's a big silver leaf maple, too.
Okay. And my next question, are you in the suburbs? Are you close to any natural areas?
Not really. Mostly just suburbs, basically.
Okay. Oh, I hear somebody. the reason I'm asking is that both of those have been escaping into our woods, and they are of concern. So if you are close to natural areas, I would say absolutely not for either of them. The winter creeper has been especially bad. Vinca minor is a little bit easier to control, so you can try that. But if you're close to a metro park, please don't plant it.
What about like lilies or something like that? Tiger lilies?
The day lilies, those would work. We call them ditch lilies. Mm-hmm. So if you want something a little taller, or cattails if it stays really wet.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Beth and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beth. You got to have to turn off your radio or turn it down, Beth.
I'm on a cell phone.
Okay, you still have to turn down.
No radio's on.
Okay.
Are you getting feedback?
Okay, sorry about
that's
that,
better.
Beth.
Okay, we received a composting setup that's like a worm farm.
Mm-hmm. Vermiculture.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We don't want to set it up now in the winter thinking that the worms would freeze to death. I mean, they're in levels of, there's like plastic layers.
Mm-hmm.
And when would it be appropriate to set it up outside?
Well, definitely not outside this time of year. My vermiculture bins are in my basement. People laugh at me about that, but I do have worms in my basement. One of my worm farms, unfortunately, has died, but the other one's okay. Outside, you need the temperatures to be above freezing and preferably above, I believe, 50 degrees. It should say, were there instructions?
Yeah, but I just wanted it from an expert like
you. Okay, thank you. You really want it to be above 50 degrees, and you want it to be in the shade, otherwise you will have cooked worms. So don't put them in the sun. Put them in a protected location where the medium won't dry out, and keep a watch on them in the summer. Otherwise, like I said, they could get too hot.
Do you think like after the last frost in the spring?
That should be fine. You probably could even go before, just that if the temperature is going to go down, you will need to cover them just like you would a plant.
Yeah, it has a cover.
Okay.
We're fairly new to this, but we're going to give it a try.
Okay. There's actually a lot of information on vermiculture on the web, and it makes great stuff, fertilizer for your plants.
Okay.
All right. Okay, good luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Beth. Bye. Chad in Urbana, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Chad.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you can use cat litter in your compost.
I would not. Cat litter and there are different schools of thought on
that. You
mean
used cat litter, Chad?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, thank you. The feces of cats carry a disease that you really don't want in your compost pile.
Mm-hmm.
Same with dogs. And toxoplasmosis. I was waiting for it to surface to the top of my brain. And even though you may have removed all the feces, some of that can remain behind. If I have used cat litter, it goes into my quote-unquote bad compost pile where I do not use it. But that way, it, at least it's going back into the environment. Also, some of the cat litter, some are clay, some are wheat-based, corn-based, whatever. The wheat and corn go away faster than the clay. So it's up to you, but I would not put it in one, especially one that I am using for food. And if you're going to work in the garden, you could get that toxoplasmosis onto your hands, and that would be a bad thing, into your eyes.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Jed.
You're welcome.
Beth and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you. I just wanted to tell Deborah, she was talking about Epsom salts and couldn't remember what vegetable. And I know that my father-in-law back in the 50s and 60s, when there wasn't all the fertilizer available, mm-hmm. always put Epsom salts around his tomatoes.
Okay. Well, of course, that would make sense. Potassium is for fruit development and fruit support.
Yeah.
So, of course. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Thanks, Beth.
Thanks. Bye.
There's nobody waiting online. If you have a call for Deborah Kanapke, you can go to 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest, once again, Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage. So what about gardens for looks? Winter gardens, pretty things you can put in your garden that will end up looking good by the time winter comes around.
Dwarf conifers. I love dwarf conifers, although some of mine aren't so dwarf anymore. Now, they've been in place for about 25 years. But even so, they're not big. They're 3 and 4 feet tall and wide. And then I have little tiny ones that are, gosh, I don't know, about, 8 inches uh-huh. tall, 8 inches wide. So dwarf conifers really give you something to look at in the winter. And they're attractive all year round. They don't change. This time of the winter, I also like to leave up attractive grasses. Yeah, right now, I have the switchgrass and they call it savanna grass or ravenna grass. That's the real tall one, 12 to 15 feet tall. And those give a nice vertical element in the garden. And since we've had no snow, they're all standing. Yeah, so they still look good. And I also have what are called subshrubs, your thymes, your lavenders, that silvery look, lavenders, thymes, lavenders, sages, and, dianthus, little carnations.
Really?
They make little flat mats, and they're silvery gray in my garden right now, especially where they're not overwhelmed with water. In my rock gardens, they look better than in my gardens where they're in clay. In dirt, soil. Excuse me, did I just say dirt?
You did.
Oh, my gosh.
Bad. Why?
Dirt's under your fingernails, soil's
in
the garden.
Oh, dirt's dirty and soil's wonderful and perfect. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to mention that Epsom is actually magnesium sulfate.
Thank you. It
bless
is not
heart.
Potassium. it's good to be wrong sometime. It keeps you humble.
Oh, it was tickling me because tomatoes benefit because I think magnesium is really good for the root growth.
Magnesium has a lot of different actions. They're really good for cell support.
Okay.
We need magnesium in animal and plant cells for the cells to work correctly. So it's one of those that is good for the whole organism. So.
And then I've read, or I haven't, unfortunately I haven't experienced it, but I've read that Epsom's is a big no-no for asparagus.
Huh. And but. I do not know why.
Why? Yeah.
But there, magnesium is considered one of the major elements that we need. We always talk about NPK, but calcium, magnesium, and sulfur are also three important ones. But some plants react badly to too much of a good thing, and that's probably there's a sensitivity issue. I'm guessing. I don't know for sure.
And then last winter, last fall, this was last year, I just didn't do anything this year, but last fall I planted, fall before, mm-hmm. I planted asparagus early in the fall, or no, spinach early in the fall,
mm-hmm.
and a bunch of different types of spinach. And there was one in particular that was shaped like an arrow,
mm-hmm.
like a point. It was a really interesting, I think it was an Italian.
I was about to say, was that the New Zealand spinach that really isn't a spinach?
Well, then maybe, because I'll tell you what, I planted that. It grew up really nicely, and then it survived fully all through winter, even through thick snows. I could go out and dig the snow off and pick spinach.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did it the whole – this is down in Hocking Hills, and then in the spring, you know, it just grew up, and I kept harvesting. I had spinach until the heat of the summer came.
You need to look at your seed packets and broadcast that.
Yeah,
on
I want to know what
page.
kind of spinach that was.
Spinach.
I love spinach.
But I have had spinach. It loves the cold. It hates the heat. That's why it dies out in the summer, but loves spring and fall. So
yeah,
that's a success story.
Figure that out and let us know.
Well, I can tell you, go to Oakland Park Nursery, uh-huh. and they were in a big packet. I don't know if you ever look at the seeds over there. Sometimes you'll see these ones in giant packets and it has, like, Spanish on them, too.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might be Italian.
Okay.
And it was like a triangular-shaped spinach leaf. And I didn't do it this year, but I bought the seeds. But I'm gonna try it again this fall, this coming early fall.
All right. Well, keep us posted.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Deborah, did you?
I was just going to say I'm going to have to call Mary Stowe at Oakland Park and say, what is the spinach in the big packet? So if either Beth or I will try to post something on Facebook. You hear that,
okay.
Beth?
All right, Beth. We'll post it on Facebook.
Okay.
David,
Hello.
Whoops. Hey.
David in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, David.
How you doing?
Good.
We're going to start a community garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good-sized garden, but it's close by the road. And I was wondering, is there any kind of vegetables that we should be watching out for because of the emissions from the car?
You need to not put your root crops close to the road. I do not know how far from the road you will have the impact of the heavy metals from the emissions from cars, trucks, etc. That's something that I know there's been some studies on, but I do not know the results. So avoid root crops in that area. I would probably, close to the road, put sunflowers and not use the seed. A lot of your plants in the daisy family are bioaccumulators of heavy metals and whatever, and they have even been used to clean soils. So maybe after a few years of that, you may be able to put crops into that area. Although if it's close to the road, it'll continually be.
Yeah. But sunflowers are pretty, so that's nice to look at.
So you could have sunflowers there that would block some of the emissions and also hopefully clean the soil. I'll see if I can find some information and post it on Facebook for you.
Okay, David. Good question, David. Thank you. And poor Don. Sorry about that. Don from Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Don.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering what to do about my peach tree. I have a peach tree here in Cincinnati, and it's got some side branches, I guess, suckers on them right now. And I understand that you should only trim those in the spring because peach trees like to put out a lot of replacement branches when the first branches are cut off, and if I cut them off any time before that, they'd be putting out branches in the fall and winter. And the second question is on the peach tree, is there's a blight that I have on this thing. It makes the leaves curl up. It makes the leaves red and bumpy and just terrible looking. And I was wondering if that was due to some kind of mildew or something, and if I could put wood ashes or something on the tree or around the tree to stop that.
Okay. As to the side branches, you're talking about the ones that go straight vertical up?
Either low or along the main trunk and branches, there's some side branches that
are coming out from the trunk horizontally, or are you talking about vertical branches that go straight up?
That shoot up.
They're mostly straight up.
Okay. Those are water shoots, and you can remove those at any time. Some people suggest that you remove them actually in the summer, but you can remove them now. they take away from the rest of the tree. As to the blight that's on your leaves, it is probably a fungus. And if you have a curling of the tip of the branch, that is fire blight. If you have bubbling on the peach leaf, that is peach leaf curl, and that you need to use a dormant oil very early in the season. And
which would be, what's the season?
Early
in the spring or early in the summer?
Early in the spring.
Okay.
Early in the spring. And I need to find out what that timing is for you. I look it up every year. You think I would remember because I have the same problem. I'm guessing it's peach leaf curl that you have and dormant oil if you're going organic, because you're saying wood ashes. Wood ashes won't help in this instance that I know of.
I put on the wood ashes already, so should I wait for them to rinse off before I put on any oil to the branches or tree or anything?
The wood ashes will wash off by themselves,
right.
So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. It has an alkalizing effect.
Right.
I'm not sure if that will work or not. But the dormant oil, there's a timing. There's a window of time for dormant oil. So, pardon me. So look up peach leaf curl. Ohio State Extension Service does have a fact sheet on peach trees, and I believe peach leaf curls in there with the timing for the dormant oil application. But I will also put that on Facebook.
Thanks, Don, for the call. Colleen in Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Colleen.
Hi. I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. I recently received a rain barrel as a birthday gift, and I was going to have it collect rain from our roof to water our garden. I've read some literature that recommended not to use runoff from the roof in an edible vegetable garden. What are your thoughts?
The reason is because of pollution, whatever, that's on the roof, and also some of the grit from the roof can come down and get into the water. I have used those in some of my edible containers. And I have also heard that it's usually the first rains of the spring that you're most concerned about. Although it's been raining so doggone much, I think we have very clean roofs at this time. try not to have any of the particulate matter, you know, strain it out, go into your gardens. If you're concerned about it, don't use it in your edible gardens. I have not noticed a problem yet. Maybe I will in 10, 15 years.
Your offspring.
But I have also heard that recommendation, and I think it is the first water off the roof, so to speak, after having a very long period of time without.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much.
You're
welcome.
Thanks,
Colleen. My guest is Deborah Knapke. If you have a question for Ohio's Garden Sage, you can phone us at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't forget about the Facebook page. That's where Deborah will be posting her you know, these details that she's going to look up for you. She's really good about it. It's an extra special service that she provides WOSU listeners. So we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
In 1943, a squadron of bombers staged one of the most daring raids in history, destroying two dams in Germany's industrial heartland and cutting the water supply to arms factories. Wednesday night, watch as Nova recreates the extreme challenges faced by British engineers and the pilots who embarked on the mission. They were hailed as heroes who dealt a mighty blow to the German war machine. Watch Nova bombing Hitler's dams Wednesday night at 9 on WOSU-TV.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, a discussion of efforts to ban puppy mills and dog auctions in Ohio. We'll get an update from Jim Siegel with the Columbus Dispatch. And then after that, we'll have an open forum. That's on All Sides with Ann Fisher from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Rain in the forecast for today, a high of 47 degrees. More rain likely tonight, a low of 39. And then a chance of rain turning into a chance of snow showers on Thursday, a high of 44. A rain-snow mix is also likely Thursday night, a low of 21 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about that winter garden. Why not? Apparently, you should be out there weeding it right now. And heavens, isn't it the middle of January or what? But I guess it's going to get up to the 50s today, maybe. Rainy, but that's good, too. It loosens up the soil a little bit.
Yeah.
Do we even have that frozen soil? Have we had anything close to that this year?
I haven't seen it.
So you could still be putting in bulbs at this point.
You could.
Well, I just saying because I didn't get to it this year. You're catching up on stuff.
I know. Everyone has to catch up on something, right? But if you do put bulbs in this time of year, know that you may only have leaves.
Okay.
But you could also have flowers. It depends.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Glenn and Mentor, I'm headed your way.
Oh, Mentor, close to where I grew up.
Hi, Glenn. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
Just a comment a little further, the discussion on spinach wintering.
Mm-hmm.
Swiss chard, it does just as well, and it's a great substitute for spinach. But I don't garden anymore, but several years ago I had Swiss chard in a couple of winters. It winters well, it seems to grow, and you can harvest it all winter long.
Mm-hmm. And if we do get cold weather sometime this winter, all you need is a little bit of row cover. And we've eaten Swiss chard over the whole winter, and then we cut it down, and then it grows up a whole new group of leaves in the spring, and we have spring Swiss chard.
Yep.
Jeez.
It's in the beet family, very cold hardy.
Oh, yes, beets are my new veggie this year. Glenn, thanks for the call.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye. And then Marie and Powell. Hi, Marie. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, like I was telling your lady, I was interested if that lady had heard anything about growing nut trees in Ohio now.
Mm-hmm.
I read in this one gardening book that we're in a completely different climate zone now. I mean, according to them. And I always wanted to have an almond tree. And I don't know much about them, but I've been thinking, well, I wonder if I have a microclimate in my yard where I could put one. And also, I was wondering if we have another heat wave, what kind of vegetables or fruits would be most likely to withstand that kind of weather here in Ohio?
Good question. Okay.
Yeah. As to the nut trees, there are a lot of nut trees for Ohio. And, yes, we are in Zone 6 by most people's counting instead of Zone 5, which means our average minimum temperature is between minus 0 and minus 10. I had to think about that. There is a hardy almond tree. Put in hardy almond tree on Google, and hopefully you'll be able to find a supplier. I did look it up and did find one. There's a company called Oikos, O-I-K-O-S, and that's Greek for ecology. And they have hardy almond trees, but it's awfully small. You might also go to your garden centers this spring and ask that they get them in. As to vegetables for the heat wave, that's a good one. Our tomatoes, our chilies, our peppers, you know, all those crops that we're harvesting in late July, August, early September, they like the heat. Of course, if it gets too hot, nothing likes it.
Like last summer.
Yeah, if we stay in the 90s or if we're in these nice cool temperatures and then shoot up to 90 and stay there 3 weeks like we did last year.
Nothing.
Yeah, the plants go, whoa, what
Which
the
is
heck?
Why we don't want to live in a desert.
Yes.
If you like to garden.
So, you know, but then, you know, it's good to have heat-tolerant crops and cold-tolerant crops because then you have food in the winter, too. So there's many sides to that coin.
All right, Marie, I hope that helped. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. And Nicole in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Hi, thank you very much. I had a question about finding out resources or somewhere, a book or something, about native plants to Ohio that were edible, or native plants to our region, to try to start bringing some of those into my garden.
There are. I'm trying to think of the book's name. I may have to put it on Facebook because it's not coming to the surface of my brain right now. But if you're looking at, first of all, if you're thinking of living on the edible plants in Ohio, it's going to be a little tough. But it is nice to have native edible plants like pawpaws, walnuts. I'm thinking of the trees right now. There are a lot of trees that are, anyways, I will look for that reference for you and put it up because it is not coming to the surface of my brain as to which ones are native to Ohio and edible at the same time. But that is a huge interest right now. So thanks for asking that question.
Yeah, I had spent a lot of time in the desert southwest, and I was really surprised at how many things you could eat out in the desert and how much variety and diversity there was. So when we moved back to Ohio, we were really excited about finding out some other things that we could start to cultivate ourselves.
Look up a funny little thing called the American ground nut. Take a look at that. It's called Apios americana. It's just a cute little thing. Take a look at that, and then I'll get some other information for you on Facebook.
Okay, Nicole, thanks for the call. David in Hilliard wanted to know what hints you have for stopping deer from eating tomato plants. He said he tried marigolds, but he prefers not to use chemicals. Please advise. And then at the same time, I'm going to take a call from Patty along those same lines. Patty in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have a big problem with squirrels and chipmunks eating my tomatoes, and I was wondering if you might have a solution.
So we have squirrels, chipmunks, and deer eating tomatoes, and yes, they. You know,
everybody likes tomatoes.
I know. I haven't had the chipmunks go after my tomatoes or the squirrels. Question, are your tomatoes enclosed? Or are they out there for anyone to get them?
No.
No what?
We have a privacy fence.
Okay.
And I have actually seen the chipmunks climb the plant to eat them, and I've seen the squirrels on top of the fence eating a tomato.
That's way cool. They've become gourmets. Okay.
It's not cool because I they get them and I don't.
I know. That's true. That is the other side of the coin, as we say. So for the deer issue, for the email one, I have enclosed them in a 7.5-foot fence, our garden, but that does not keep out the chipmunks and squirrels. We did dig our fence down into the ground to keep them from digging in, but then they go over the top. There are some sprays that you can use at the ground level that that keep away squirrels and chipmunks. And there are several of these formulations on the market. They have to be reapplied.
Do you remember the caller, Amy Jurevich, my associate producer, remembers that last time you were on in the summer, the squirrels were eating them for water, and someone put out water to drink, and the squirrels drank the water instead.
I have a bird bath, you know, because I thought, well, you know, the moisture, obviously, but that hasn't really helped.
That didn't help, okay.
No, they've decided they like the taste of tomatoes, and that's not surprising because chipmunks and squirrels, they're all adaptable. So you're going to need to try to exclude them with smells and scents and predator scents so that they think something's going to get them if they go into that area.
Okay.
And that's what I would start with. And then maybe BB gun practice. But I didn't say
that's terrible.
On
Patty, don't listen to that. Okay, Patty, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Take
Thank
care.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was bad, wasn't
Jury.
It?
Jury.
Sorry.
Jury in Clark County, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jury.
Good morning, Ann and Deborah.
Good morning.
I live in Clark County over in sort of the western part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
We have a wild plant. I believe it's native here. It's horsetail.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
I sure am.
Okay. I have a swale in the front yard. I have about 1.25 acres. But I'd like to find out. I'd like to use that horsetail in that swale. And I don't know what the upkeep requirements would be of that plant.
The upkeep would be keeping it from not going everywhere else in your yard.
Is it native?
It is native.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
But where it's native in Ohio, it has other plants that compete with it. But if you were to put it in your lawn, lawn cannot compete with horsetail. Horsetail will just start coming up 2, 4, 6 feet away from where you planted it and just poking up into your lawn. It tends to like moist areas, so it'll stay where it's moist, but it will look for other moisture if it becomes too crowded in that swale that you have. So if you decide to put it in that ditch area, you will be spending most of your time keeping it out of areas that you don't want it to go in. It spreads very quickly unless the other competing plants aren't there to keep it in check.
Okay.
Something else you would suggest?
Well, since you're talking about horsetail, it sounds like you want something a little bit taller. So you could take a look at ditch lilies, which people have used, the orange daylilies. Cattails have been used. Rushes, if it's really wet, are attractive. And while these plants can spread, they tend to like to stay where it's moist. So usually they don't go out into the lawn.
Oops, Jerry, I just cut Jerry off. Sorry about that, Jerry.
Hope that helps,
Jerry.
Good luck.
Okay, and we're winding on down here, and I want to get to as many people as I can. Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi. Hey, I have about an acre for a yard, and I've got several trees, and it's really tough to trim around them. Is it all right to use Roundup around the base of those trees, or does that cause a problem if it hits the bark?
That is something I see a lot of commercial organizations do. Personally, I don't like the practice. It would be better if you were to cut the turf out of that area and put mulch down or a ground cover. And if your lawnmower should get into the ground cover and chop a little bit of it off, that would be fine. But I've been told that Roundup does not pass the barrier of the bark, but I'm not sure I believe that. Our trees are under so many stresses already. Why give them another?
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, good luck on that one.
Bye. Barbara in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Well, my yard, part of it, slopes towards my basement.
Uh-oh.
This causes my basement to get rather wet now and then.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that there are rain gardens, plants that soak up rainwater. What should I plant in this part of my yard that slopes to my basement to keep the water out of the basement?
Well, first of all, you might also consider changing the topography, the lay of the land of your backyard a little bit, because that's a problem that maybe the rain garden will help, but it, depending on the slope, may not help enough. But if it's a slight slope, there are excellent publications about rain gardens and a whole list of plants that you can use. If you go on to just Google and put in Rain Garden and Hamilton County, Ohio, you will get their Rain Garden Guide, which is excellent.
Okay, Barbara, thank you.
Yeah.
Ruth in Hocking Hills, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ruth.
We're on a marathon here.
Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
Sarah's next. Okay, Ruth.
Okay. I have a flower bed that is bordered with treated lumber, and I'm getting tired of the flowers that are in there, and I thought maybe I could plant some vegetables in there. It's been 15 years since this was built, and I wondered if it's still leaching anything that would be harmful for vegetables.
Typically, as long as the treated lumber has not been cut into, it shouldn't be leaching out bad stuff, although you said 15 years ago, and that concerns me a bit because 15 years ago they were allowed to use copper arsenic and a couple other very bad chemicals. I don't know what was used on your wood, and so I hesitate to recommend you putting any vegetables in that bed unless it's big enough that you have 2 to 3 feet away from the lumber.
No, that's about the distance.
Okay.
That the bed is made. Is there any way to test the soil to see?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There is a company in Westerville called CLC Labs. You can look them up on the web if you have access to that. And they can send you out a kit. I believe they can test for those kinds of substances in the soil. But that's a darn good question, and I'm going to check.
All right, Ruth, thanks for the call. And Sarah, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Sarah and Dayton.
Hi. I have moss growing in my lawn and also in my perennial beds and around my peonies. And it seems to have gotten worse the last 2 years. Of course, we've had a lot of rain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if this is harmful. Should I rake it out? Should I pull it out? Should I apply lime? What's going on?
The moss is an indication of poor drainage. So with all the rain that we've had and that we have clay-heavy soils, what we have is a waterlogged situation. So what you need to do if you want to grow in these beds and you don't want the moss there, then you need to dig up the moss. You can let the moss stay in there and add compost. What you need to do is loosen up that soil so that water can percolate through, because right now it can't. And so the moss is, you have a moss garden instead of your perennial and vegetable garden. So you need to increase the drainage, the friability. And compost is one of the best ways to do it.
Thanks a lot, Sarah. Hope that helps. Terry in Utica, really quick. Terry, we're running out of time. Hi, okay. Terry.
Hi. I just have a question about kale. I still have kale in my garden, mm-hmm. but it's frozen because I don't have it covered. Is it still edible even after it's been frozen?
We just ate some last week. So when it thaws, if it is still feels like kale, then go ahead and eat it. If it is limp, then probably not.
All right, Terry, thanks for the call. Thanks for being quick with us. Email from Wayne, coffee grounds, how much can be used in your compost? As much as you can produce?
As much as you want to put in your compost. I would be careful about putting it directly in the garden, but put as much as you want in the compost pile and mix it in.
Raised beds for Charlotte, New Albany, dead plants like parsley. Should we do something to prepare the beds for winter? Can you leave that stuff in there?
You can leave it in there.
Okay. Gosh, Deborah. Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage. Thanks for joining us today.
It was fun.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for listening.